Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and that was fun getting to talk with Beth Sri. This hour, another great guest, Liz Kelly, the author of a whole bunch of books, including, I just wanted to mention right up the front, Jesus Approaches, What Contemporary Women Can Learn About Healing, Freedom, and Joy from the Women in the New Testament. Among her several books, maybe the most pertinent today, because we're going to talk about women in the New Testament. So I welcome your call, 888-318-7884. You want to talk about the New Testament? You want to talk about particularly a woman or women in the New Testament? Maybe you want to talk about Jesus's own treatment of women in the New Testament. You are welcome to call 888-318-7884. Liz Kelly, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Oh, and it's lizk.org. That's where people can find you online, right?
Correct. That is right.
Well, I was just mentioning among your many books, Jesus Approaches, What Contemporary Women Can Learn About Healing, Freedom, and Joy from the Women in the New Testament. It's possible that someone might have read the New Testament and say, I didn't notice that many women in there.
Yeah, I've had that experience myself.
So what do you say to that person?
Well, it's funny because for about 10 years or so in Catholic studies at the University of St. Thomas, where I've been teaching, I taught a course called Woman and Man. And it's really about complementarity in between men and women in the church and their roles and vocation, that sort of thing. And in some ways, that was really the introduction for me to just a deeper look at the role of women in the church. And then I combined that with some years later, going through the exercises of St. Ignatius of Loyola, you know, praying in a very deliberate and a very scheduled, disciplined way through the New Testament. And it was funny in that experience how often women kept showing up. And how often they kind of kept popping out of the pages at me. And maybe it was because I had been primed with, you know, all these years of teaching woman and man. But I think it was sort of a convergence of these two things that kind of took a veil down from my eyes. And then, of course, I began to see the feminine influence all over. And I also began to understand just historically, you know, why there was less emphasis on women in the early church. And I mean, that's a longer conversation, but, you know, the first apostles were working with pagans who believed in feminine deities. And there was, you know, there were a lot of different parts that were trying to be very, very clear about who Jesus was and not wanting to confuse people's about pagan deities, feminine deities in general. Anyway, that's a longer story. But, you know, once I started to, curiously, it's like I'd done the reading, I'd done the research, I'd done the study, but once I started praying with the scriptures in that way, that's when the women really started to kind of present themselves and populate the imagination of my soul with, you know, their presence and their affect.
888-318-7884 is our number. We're talking about women in the New Testament with Liz Kelly this hour. Your calls are welcome. If you have a question about women in the New Testament or a particular woman in the New Testament, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. So Liz, in your reading, and the women of the New Testament are coming alive for you, kind of standing out now, how did you come to think about how Jesus treats women?
Well, it's easy to discover that because there are examples of it. You know, we don't have to go into our imagination. There are various and numerous and a wide variety of ways in which he interacts with the women around him, drawing them into his work. Relying upon them to, you know, help probably keep him fed and cleaned and, you know, on the road during his public service. There's obviously the relationship that he had with his mother. He was mothered and as well as fathered here in the year of St. Joseph. We have to give a nod to St. Joseph,
Amen.
Of course. But So you don't have to look very far. You know, you don't really have to look very far. And when the book came out, my archdiocese asked me to put together a study based on that, based on the book. And in that, I looked even further at scriptures and Christ's very specific kind of interactions with women to get a cue from them. And, you know, he treats them with so much dignity and with such, I don't even want to use the word equality because that's got so much baggage with it. But, you know, he was a master at seeing and receiving the fullness of every person before him, man, woman, child. And there was a way that he interacted with women that I think we really need to pay attention to because it's what also then directs how the church interacts with women and the ways that they unleash women to work in the world.
Ah, that's it. Okay, I see your point. So, right, because if we're going to take our clues from Jesus about how mm-hmm. we treat people, then how he treats each individual group of people is going to really set the stage for how those people are treated even today.
Well, yes, but also it's like, I think even beyond that, you know, we could make the statement that he sees the unique and unrepeatable beauty and reality of every soul before him, whether they are a man, a woman, or a child. And that has to color everything when we start talking about complementarity. How did he treat women? How did he treat men? How did he treat children? You know, how did he right. treat the Samaritans or whatever? That's the primary lesson that we need to pull from that he sees the individual and therefore he sees you with all of the nuance that makes up you. And there's no part of you have to leave on a shelf in order to interact with him. You know, you're being male or female or this or that or whatever, that we can bring ourselves in our wholeness to him and be received by him in our wholeness. And I think that's important just to mention because, you know, there were many women who did approach him.
Right.
And they approached him with their wounds and their pasts and their histories and their failures and their needs and their hopes and dreams. And there wasn't any part of them as women that they had to leave behind. They could come as the whole persons that they were.
888-318-7884. We're talking about women in the New Testament this hour with our guest, Liz Kelly. Among her many books, I mean, she's written 50 Reasons I Love Being Catholic, Heaven in You, You in Heaven, Unveiling Eternity on Earth, and others. But I'll just mention Jesus Approaches, What Contemporary Women Can Learn About Healing, Freedom, and Joy from the Women of the New Testament. 888-318-7884 is the number. Liz, are there women, like if someone said to you, well, give me a woman that you admire in the New Testament. Does anybody jump out at you?
Oh, I think Magdalene is probably she was the first chapter that I finished.
Uh-huh.
And she kind of became an anchoress for the rest of the book. And the scene, of course, that just moves the heart and so deeply is her. Everybody else has left the tomb. And she's going to stay behind. You know, she just can't bear the thought of not being near, you know. So she's going to the tomb. She doesn't have any idea how she's going to open up, you know, move the stone. It's way too big for her to move. But, you know, all of that is secondary. You know, she's just going in search of the one she loves. And in turn, what she discovers is that the one who loves finds her. And I think that's, you know, a microcosm for the whole Christian life. And it's just captured so beautifully in the New Testament in that scene, you know, when she falls and tries to cling to Jesus and he calls her by name, you know, and that is what he does for all of us. He calls us by name. He comes in search of us and we end up discovering him.
Again, our number 888-318-7884. We're talking with author Liz Kelly about women in the New Testament. You're very welcome to call. I have to take a quick break, however, before we get to the calls. 888-318-7884. We're giving away a free ebook right now at shop.catholic.com, and it's about Lent. It's 20 answers. Lent, if you got questions about Lent, we got 20 answers about Lent for you. Just head over to shop.catholic.com, and you get it free in the ebook format, shop.catholic.com.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
I firmly believe that prayer is communication with God. And if we know that God is a loving Father, why wouldn't we want to talk to God? The reality is, we've got to talk to our family, we've got to talk to our friends, and if God is real, and God is definitely real, He wants to hear about our day. He also wants to know how we're doing and what our needs are. Prayer is communication with God.
Hi, this is Cy Kellett. Don't forget to check out the latest episode of our podcast, Catholic Answers Focus. You can listen each week to the world's premier podcast on Catholic apologetics at CatholicAnswersFocus.com or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Catholic Answers Focus, now available at CatholicAnswersFocus.com.
How can a human woman be God's mother? Where in the Bible does it say that Mary was sinless and a perpetual virgin? What can I do to build and deepen my relationship with Mary as my spiritual mother in heaven? In 20 Answers Mary, you'll find biblical evidence for Marian doctrine and devotion, answers to common objections to Catholic teachings about Mary, and guidance on how to imitate Christ as you get to know the Blessed Mother like you've never known her before. 20 Answers Mary is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com today and take a look at this exciting new series from Catholic Answers Press.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Liz Kelly is our guest. You can find her at Liz K, L-I-Z-K, at, .org. I was going to say at. I'm going to learn the internet ways one of these days. Among her many books, Jesus Approaches, What Contemporary Women Can Learn About Healing, Freedom, and Joy from the Women of the New Testament. Our topic this hour is the women of the New Testament, and you are welcome to call with your questions, 888-318-7884. So what can women take from the women of the New Testament? What did you find as you studied the women in the New Testament?
You know, I think more than anything, I was just so heartened to see in a new and a deeper, in a very real way, their presence and the import of that. You know, as we were saying before, Jesus was mothered.
Right.
He was wildly, deeply influenced and formed by the Blessed Mother, and that I think just lends a dignity to motherhood that can't be undone. But I think also that he had very real and close relationships with women, in that friendships. They were sort of like sister brother kinds of relationships, and he also put women to work. You know, he sends the Samaritan woman back into the very crowd she's trying to avoid. You know, they call her the apostle to the apostles, or, you know, one of the first missionaries. I'm sorry, I got Magdalene mixed up there. She was the apostle to the apostles. But, you know, he gave them work. He gave them really important, very serious works to do. And the fact that, they were present at some of the most important moments in all of human and Christian history, you know, namely the resurrection. You know, if he was interested in establishing a kingdom of power, he would have first appeared to the kings, the wealthy, the rulers of the world. And that's not what he does. You know, instead, he appears to the lowly, the kind of nameless, those who didn't have a great deal of import in the culture, and says, I'm going to entrust this incredible moment, this extraordinary gift to you. You know, there can't be anything more dignifying than that. There's just a lot to explore. But I mean, that's definitely one of the things that I take away from that, is that women have a role to play. And it's a really important one.
Do you see that in the you mentioned scenes from the Gospels, but in the, for example, the letters of St. Paul are about mostly about the community that came later, or the Acts of the Apostles. Mm-hmm. Do you see this continuing role for women that even might be surprising for the ancient world in the other parts of the New Testament as well?
Yeah, I think so. I would say, you know, I'm less familiar with the letters of Paul. I'm not certainly not an expert on that at all. But I do think that, again, there's a clear evidence that women were continuing to participate in the evangelization of the world around them. That can't be overlooked or understated.
Amen. Amen to that. 888-318-7884 is our number. 888-31-TRUTH. I shouldn't leave out men in considering this. Like, I'm asking you these questions as if Jesus' treatment of women is basically a question that women would want answered. But actually, Jesus' treatment of women gives us a lot of information about how men should treat women. What do you take from that?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's a good way to put it too. Just a sense of everyone has their role to play. And I think that in observing Jesus's interactions with women, what we take away from that as a church is, again, just an emphasis in that we all have our role to play. It's not going to be the same role where, you know, part of the church body, somebody's a heart, somebody's an ear, somebody's a hand, somebody's the nose, you know, whatever. I have a colleague, she's just filled with energy. I call her the adrenal gland of the church body, you know? And yeah. So it's like everybody has their spot to their role to play, and they're all important. You know, if you don't have a brain, the heart doesn't have much to do, you know, and so on and so forth. So it's like we need all of these different parts. And I think for a long time, women have felt sort of there have been times and examples of when women have been separated or taken apart, set aside as if their roles were not equally important, even if they're different. You know, I'll never be a father. It's physically, metaphysically impossible for me to father. And yet fatherhood is a critically important role. You know, what I can be is a mother, you know, and that's a critically important role. So the fact that I can't be one or the other doesn't negate the other. It only, again, points to the fact that we were created for communion. And this is reflected in every aspect of life and vocation in particular.
Shall we go to calls? There's callers on the line for you.
Sure.
All right. Liz Kelly is our guest. We're talking about women in the New Testament. You're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Whether you're Christian or not, whether you're Catholic or not, your call is always welcome here. 888-318-7884. I'll just mention again, among Liz's books, Jesus Approaches, What Contemporary Women Can Learn About Healing, Freedom, and Joy from the Women of the New Testament. Who's up first? Vladimir in Delaware, listening on the EWTN app. Vladimir, you there with us? Happy to do it. Vladimir, go ahead with your question for Liz.
Yes, my question is, did Mary Magdalene have children?
Mm-hmm. I think that tradition tells us no, that she remained celibate for the rest of her life. And but that's a good question.
Is that a Dan Brown kind of question? Are you is that where you're coming from, Vladimir?
When I'm listening to you guys talk about Mary Magdalene, and for some reason I just said, I wonder if she had children when all this was happening to her, when she, you know, when she met Jesus. And I don't know. So I just wanted to see if you knew something I didn't know.
I just wrote another book called Love Like a Saint, Learning the Virtues with Holy Women. And I did a great deal of research on Magdalene for a chapter in that book. And I've read pretty much everything I could find to get my hands on. And there are a number of different traditions that have sprung from Magdalene, but I don't ever recall ever seeing any evidence that she had had children, either before her encounter with Christ or after. But again, I'm not the last word on that.
You are today. 888-318-7884, the number. 888-31-TRUTH. Vladimir, thank you very, very much. I wasn't trying to be a smart aleck to Vladimir, but there's this Dan Brown idea that Jesus and the Magdalene were married. That doesn't seem to me to be supported by any evidence. I don't know how you feel about it.
That Jesus was married, certainly not. that Magdalene was ever married, no, certainly not. We don't have any evidence to suggest that at all.
I want to ask you about Jesus with the woman caught in adultery, because we read that story as Jesus, the merciful Savior, and it is just shot through with mercy and also in a certain sense, it's mercy with a little irony to it in that he tweaks the men like, okay, go ahead.
Right? Sure.
But it also comes at the end with now go and sin no more. So there's a way in which his mercy, I don't think we should, I guess what I'm trying to get at is there's a kind of sentimentalized idea of mercy, and that's not what Jesus gives men or women.
I agree. I think mercy and justice come as a package. And I've been reading a lot of St. Maximilian Kolbe. He's sort of my saint for the year. I've been spending my mornings with him. And, you know, he was crazy about the Blessed Mother. And
right.
He did his doctoral work on the Immaculate Conception and so on and so forth. And he talks about how, you know, justice comes through Jesus and mercy comes through Mary. And, you know, he's just talking about, how, again, a sense of complementarity between these two attributes. And mercy isn't mercy without the truth. You know, it's not merciful to say to tell someone a lie. You know, it's not, that's not merciful. So of course Christ, in coming to the woman caught in adultery or to the Samaritan woman, telling her whole life, you know, leaving out no detail of sin, you know, kind of really giving her the whole scoop, but at the same time, you know, giving her, despite this past, important work to do, and giving her the capacity to, an opportunity to receive forgiveness, and so that she can and absolution, so that she can go on and do work for the kingdom. And that's essential for all of us, that you know, despite whatever the sins are, we have the capacity to receive absolution and then be given an assignment and go back out to work in the kingdom. And it's not, you know, and especially in this day and age, I remember making a joke about my weight. I can't remember what it was, but, you know, especially like a lot of people know I have MS. I'm not, you know, quiet about it. And I've gained a lot of weight since I've been diagnosed. And then that's not uncommon. I was making a joke about it. And this younger person was mortified that I would ever make fun of the fact that I was overweight. And, you know, and for my husband and I, it's like one of our chief sources of jokes around the house. You know, it's just, so the fact that we can be honest with who we are. I mean, I think there's an element in our culture right now, the whole kind of snowflake idea that you can't ever say anything negative about anybody, but that's not at all the model that we had with Jesus.
No.
Jesus would be very, just very truthful. He'd be gentle. Sometimes he was much more firm, you know, but for most of those who were able to receive it, he was very gentle with the truth, and it did not discount them. You know, their failures, their weaknesses, their past did not discount them. They were offered mercy, they could receive it and be welcomed back into the church community.
And it's not a pat on the head like, well, go on your way, little lady. It's a very, it treats her as a very capable moral agent.
And you consider, you know, we know now she's probably coming to, I'm thinking of the Samaritan woman now, but, you know, she's coming to the well at noon to avoid those who would chide her. Oh. And she goes directly back into that group.
Oh, what a great point, Liz. Yeah.
You know, here's somebody who's told me everything I know. That takes some guts.
Liz Kelly's our guest. Sorry, the music's playing. I'm sorry to cut you off, Liz, but we'll be right back with more about women in the New Testament on Catholic Answers Live.
We're here for you. Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
Bishop Joseph Strickland of Tyler, Texas, is one of the most courageous leaders in the church, known for his outspoken support of unborn life, Orthodox faith and morals, and reforming Catholic institutions. In his groundbreaking new book, Light and Leaven, he offers a forthright perspective on the state of the church today and calls on the lay faithful to meet its challenges boldly. Touching on topics including parish renewal, the centrality of the Eucharist, the need for prayer and silence in a noisy and distracted age, and the battle between good and evil in the church and world, Bishop Strickland's wise insights and evident love for souls will inspire and edify you. To order your copy of Light and Leaven, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
To many people, even many Christians, purgatory is a fantasy, or worse, a wicked lie invented by the church to make salvation complicated and keep people in fear. But I'm here to tell you that purgatory is fact, not fiction. The Bible supports it, Christians have historically believed in it, and it makes theological sense. In my new book, Purgatory is for Real, I provide the evidence and reasoning to help you understand this controversial doctrine and demonstrate how it's actually a joyful, hopeful reality, not something shadowy and mysterious, but a sign of God's love and mercy. To get your copy of Purgatory is for Real, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
It's a big day for Liz Kelly. She's our guest, and we're playing the groovy music for her. That is very lucky. Only the best guests get the groovy music. Nick must have decided she's earned it. I guess she's earned it that first half hour, huh, Nick? That's the groovy music, Liz. You like that?
I do indeed. I wish you had a little jazz back there, but, you know, that's okay. I'll take groovy.
Well, we're not bad. We're not cool. We're groovy.
Oh,
all right?
Okay. So
if you got to be cool to play jazz.
Oh, got it.
Our number is 888-318-7884. We're talking about women in the New Testament. If you have a question about women in the New Testament, you are welcome to call our guest, Liz Kelly. You can also find out all about her at lizk.org. Lizk.org. Your Heart, His Home, A Prayer Companion. That's Liz's. Heaven in You, You in Heaven, Unraveling Eternity on Earth. That's another of her books. 50 Reasons I Love Being Catholic. And she had to shorten the list. She could have done more than 50.
She had
to shorten that list. And the book that's probably most germane to what we are talking about right now, and I'm basically showing off using big words like germane, Jesus Approaches, What Contemporary Women Can Learn About Healing, Freedom, and Joy from the Women in the New Testament. Do you ever feel like as a Christian woman, educated in the faith, you have to defend the faith against the accusation that it's anti-feminine?
Oh, sure.
You do?
Sure. Oh, sure. Even to other Catholics who might not be very well formed or catechized. You think about, why is the priesthood reserved only to men?
Yeah.
How can this be anything but misogyny? You know,
right.
Well, because that's the culture that we come out of. Any kind of reservation like that must have some sort of malice behind it rather than some spiritual reality. Again, you know, motherhood is reserved to women. Men can't mother. You know, yeah. Fatherhood is reserved to men. Women can't father. And this principle holds true even in the priesthood and in other vocations. So the question really is, you know, if women cannot be priests, is there some role that only they can hold that men cannot? And of course, the answer is motherhood, and that applies then to sisters.
I don't know if you've ever been to California, but here men can be mothers here. That's been enshrined in law now. So.
That's right. There is this, you know, tremendous confusion about you know what these things even mean.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Justin,
more important as ever that we have vocabulary to get into that conversation.
Justin in St. Paul, Minnesota is next on the line. Justin, go ahead with your question for our guest, Liz Kelly.
Kidding, Liz. Liz, I think you just answered my question, kind of, which was there's no indication in the New Testament that women would serve a priestly role, and certainly not in a patriarchal society of that time.
Right. Well, one thing you might want to think about, too, though, is that, you know, some people will argue the only reason that women weren't chosen as part of the 12 was because of this patriarchal system. We want to pay attention to the fact that I know when Jesus was choosing the 12, he had some spectacular women to choose. The Blessed Mother, first of all, if women were meant for this particular role, she would have been top of the list because she was the holiest of them all. So the fact that he does not choose her for that role tells us something really important, and we can't ignore that. Or you think of Magdalene, who just loved him so much and who had clearly, you know, had been relieved of demons and, you know, was now serving in that early church. Why not choose her? So he had plenty of spectacular women to choose from. The fact that he didn't, we want to pay attention to that. And patriarchy is another loaded word, but I'll just say in brief that it would have been understood by the Jews at that time as having to do with generation and origin, not so much male-female. You know, the man rules, the woman is passive. It had less to do with that. And I could go on and on. I mean, I used to teach about the reservation of the priesthood to men for an entire semester. So there's a lot more to be said about it. But I think that's a really compelling thing to pay attention to. It's not like Jesus did not have remarkable women to choose from. He did. The fact that he did not give his mother that role, we don't want to ignore that.
Justin, what do you make of that?
Well, thank you. I'd like to know more about, what you were talking about just a minute or so ago, to the idea of patriarchy. It has more to do with other things, other elements or components.
Well. One other thing I would add is this, you know, if it was really about patriarchy, Jesus was so countercultural. Why wouldn't he have been countercultural about that? If he was really interested in upholding some kind of patriarchal system, for example, he is the servant of servants. He washes the feet of the apostles. He's turning on its head that kind of patriarchal, I am king, I command, I have all rule, I have all power. He's turning it on its head. He's saying, you want to be a servant to servants. You know, this is what it means to be holy and to be powerful, is to serve others. So he's turning a lot of cultural norms on their head, turning them over, right? So why not turn that one over? I mean, if he was really interested in that, then why wouldn't he just break the mold and say, yes, women are going to be priests? The fact that he didn't, again, when he turns over all of these other things, we pay attention to. Here's another example. The woman, we'll go back to the woman caught in adultery. He is, in that instance, not only concerned with sexual sins, he's concerned with all sin. Whereas in that moment, they're trying to make this woman's sexual sin the most evil, the worst. And he's saying, no, you know, sins of the heart are far more corrosive, you know, pride and vanity and lying and calumny and, you know, all of these other things. He's kind of turning the table on that as well. So we want to pay attention to the ways that Christ was very countercultural, and then the ways that he chooses not to be countercultural.
Right.
We don't want to dismiss either one of those. But Justin, there are great books written on this subject that are very, very accessible. Maybe they can post a few titles in their show notes
or something. I'm sure we can. I think Brant Petrie wrote a book about it. We'll have to think about it, though.
There's great material available that's very, very accessible. You don't have to have a PhD in Christology to read them and engage them.
Justin, thanks very much for the call. 888-318-7884, the number. We're talking about women in the New Testament. I got to ask you this because I don't want to get to the end and not ask about two of the obviously most prominent women in the Bible and Jesus' relationship with the sisters Mary and Martha. What do you make of his relationship with these sisters?
Well, I think I've got a lot of sisters. I've got four older sisters and I have two brothers. And, you know, I can kind of relate to this sense of like, oh, you know, he's got a little bit of a sense of just sort of shaking his head at one of them. But I think it's really hard to be a sister. You know, I think it's really hard to be a brother. I think the big families are just such an opportunity to grow in holiness and to grow in virtue. And what I'm struck by out of the Martha Mary story is that what he hangs on to is not Martha's hospitality. So he's stopping by, maybe unannounced. She's preparing a meal. He's probably tired. He probably needs a rest. He probably needs some hospitality. That's a great gift. It's a charism.
Yeah.
He's not saying, your hospitality is bad. He's chiding her over her worry and her distraction. So when I'm operating in my charism, whatever it is, he increases and I decrease. You know, we have this experience of sort of losing ourselves in our charisms. So Martha lost this for a minute. She was getting totally into herself.
Yeah.
She was losing sight of the fact that she was in the presence of the Eucharistic Savior. You know, she stepped out of that charism. You know, when you're operating in your charism, I'm sure you've had an experience of this. You know, when I'm writing or when I'm speaking or leading a retreat or something, it's like I can go on for hours or just sort of forget how much effort I've put into something because I'm operating in a charism. That's how they work. You know, again, I decrease, he increases. And so, you know, she lost sight of that through worry, through distraction, through comparisons. and stepped out, I think, of that hospitality charism for a minute. And that concerned him. He didn't want her to miss the graces that come from operating in a charism.
Liz, that's
part of it.
Liz Kelly is our guest. We do have more calls. We have to take a quick break. We'll come right back with more of your calls for Liz. And we do have room for one or two more calls if you would like to call and talk with your question about women in the New Testament. 888-318-7884, the number, right back after this.
This is Harry Connick Jr., and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Go forth and preach the good news. It's not just a suggestion. If you want to take more seriously the command of Jesus to share the gospel with those around you, consider joining St. Paul Street Evangelization. It's a grassroots organization that brings the Catholic faith to the streets in a non-confrontational way. Visit our website, www.streetevangelization.com, to learn more. And don't forget to like us on Facebook. It's time to do our part.
Now there's a fast and easy way to get in touch with EWTN, the EWTN Everything Number. Call 1-800-447-EWTN to get the latest information on programming, special events, pilgrimages, and more. Our EWTN Family Viewer Services representatives are ready to help you with whatever your needs may be. The EWTN Everything Number, 1-800-447-EWTN. EWTN.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Liz Kelly is our guest. You can find her at lizk.org. Among her several books, many books, among her gaggle of books is a book called Jesus Approaches, What Contemporary Women Can Learn About Healing, Freedom, and Joy from the Women of the New Testament. I don't think you've said anything about freedom. So I want to ask you about that before I go back to the callers. What can contemporary women learn about freedom from the women of the New Testament?
Mm-hmm. I think the interaction that Christ has with everybody in the New Testament is directed toward freedom. That is, choosing to receive him or not. You know, he never imposes himself on anybody. He never forces himself on anybody. And so, and I think that and at least in the healing that I've experienced just in my own faith journey, there's an enormous amount of freedom that comes with that. Freedom to be who you are, freedom to believe with a certain kind of abandon, a freedom to make mistakes, you know, and to learn from them and to grow from them. But I think every, you know, he has come that we might have more freedom, that we would not be slaves and in bondage to sin. So you can't ignore the gift of freedom that comes with an encounter with Christ.
888-318-7884, Harry in Erie. Oh, by the way, that was Harry Connick Jr. that Nick played just as we went out. So he did,
Thank you.
Yeah.
And then we're so cool.
Yeah. If you play Harry Connick, you're cool. Right, right. We are now officially cool. Harry in Erie, Pennsylvania. I hope this is Harry Connick Jr. listening on Channel 130, Sirius XM satellite radio. Harry, welcome. You got a question for Liz?
Yes, this isn't Harry Connick, though.
Come on, man. Okay, go ahead.
I was just kind of wondering, you know, I think of the Virgin Mary as being an extraordinarily strong woman, and how the modern women have distorted their idea of true strength. I mean, like, just for an example, in the middle of the night, St. Joseph has a dream. And he tells Mary, we have to go to Egypt. And she just gets up and goes. You know, modern woman would have to say, like, are you out of your mind? You're going to get up at 2 in the morning right. and take me down to Egypt? You know, where did we get this idea that this is strong and that is weak? It's inverted the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the whole role of Satan in the world is to deceive and to distort. And so I think he likes to attack these fundamental truths that there's a great deal of strength in a woman who knows who she is in the Lord. And of course, he would want to pervert that. There's such a long history of that. You could even argue that it started with the Greeks, where Aristotle was struggling to understand the differences between the sexes, and he didn't have the advantage of biology and MRIs and sonogram imaging or any of that genetics. And so he thought of women, he used the expression that a woman was a misbegotten male. Take that error, we know that that's wrong, but, take that error and draw it into the centuries going forward. There were ways that that error was furthered. And distorted, and it sort of led us to this notion that men were the actors, women had to be passive, all of this kind of thing. And a lot of times that when this comes up, especially in class, I'll use the example of Mother Teresa. I mean, Saint Teresa of Calcutta is probably the strongest human being on earth, and she's dead and she's still such a powerful influence. Even posthumously, she has extraordinary influence. People know her name better than they know Pope Francis or the name Bergoglio. They know Teresa of Calcutta. So I think that part of it is a fundamental misunderstanding of the role of power versus authority. Priests in the church act on the authority that has been granted to them through Jesus Christ. They're not acting on their own authority. So to say that men have all the power in the church, again, is just a distortion of and a misunderstanding of authority. I could go on about this for weeks. We talk about this for a whole semester in my class, and it's a very good question. And it's one of the reasons that I think people working in this area steer clear of words like feminism, because it's such a loaded topic. They're keen to grab onto the feminine genius, that expression that Pope St. John Paul made famous, because it doesn't have the same kind of baggage. So now Catholic theologians are talking about masculine and feminine geniuses. What does that mean? Where do we really excel? What does our femininity bring to the church? What does our masculinity, when it's properly ordered, bring to the church? And that properly ordered piece is big too. I can bring some disordered femininity to the church, and that's not what we're after.
It is fascinating. Actually, what you said, I found very helpful, Liz, if I may say, because of this idea that modern feminism is presented as a power struggle, and that's really not what Christianity is. It's not a power struggle between men and women. It's not a power trip.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, and we're all under the authority of Christ. A priest only has power because that has been given to him. He only has authority because that has been given to him. And, this is hilarious. I have a brother who's a priest. I watched him go from working in New York, basically on Wall Street, and giving away every single thing that he had, and getting up every morning now, and he puts on black, which is the color of death, which is a reminder to him that I am dying to myself,
Right.
And so we say, oh, men have all the power. And I say, well, I have found the exact opposite. I have seen my brother grow in tremendous depth of knowledge of the authority that he has been bestowed through Christ and through his priesthood, but it's not his. It is not his. And so even just watching my brother going through seminary, becoming ordained, and, you know, now working in a seminary and working as a formator and a spiritual director has been very helpful to me in understanding that much more concretely. So I'm grateful to him for that. God bless you, John.
That's Harry. You're talking about your brother. Oh, okay. I thought you were talking to our caller.
My brother, father. Well, God bless Harry, too.
God bless you, too, Harry. You're my second favorite Harry now. Thanks, Harry.
Goodbye.
Well, he didn't like that, that I said he's my second favorite. I'm sorry. I was only playing Harry. The number, 888-318-7884. We're talking about women in the New Testament with Liz Kelly. Adam in Alberta, Canada, is next watching on YouTube Live. Adam, thanks for calling from Canada.
Always
go ahead.
Men are calling.
I know. Have we had a single woman call yet? I don't think a single woman.
Thanks for taking my call. I just I had a quick question about about a character that the Apostle Paul mentions, the character Junia, who he kind of refers and things to as an apostle. I believe it's in Romans 16, but yeah, I'm just kind of curious of thoughts or opinions about that.
Junia. Some people think that's the same Joanna. That her name would be Joanna in the Luke's gospel. So you're about Paul referring to her as an apostle, you mean?
Correct.
Okay.
I think, and again, I'm not an expert on the epistles, but I think that word has been examined, and that there are sort of layers of interpretation. So there can be, we're all called to be apostles. Absolutely. We're called to be apostles. Was she being called into like the 12? You know, that's a different term, from what I understand. But again, you know, I'm not an expert in Greek and Hebrew and,
well, you
know,
you have this. You have the. I think you have a similar thing with the word deacon for some women referred to as deaconess. Sure. These terms develop in their meaning, but I mean it has always been controversial in the. Not always, but for a long, long time, it's been controversial. What does Paul mean when he calls Junia, who might also be Joanna, an apostle? But apostle means one who's sent by Christ, and certainly if Junia is Joanna, this is a person who was who visited the tomb of Jesus. I mean, she's like Mary Magdalene, and Magdalene is called the apostle to the apostles. So I don't know, Adam. Does that all satisfy you?
It's interesting. I don't know. I find the discussion about it really interesting. I saw a really interesting N.T. Wright video on it. I find it a very interesting.
I think it is an interesting thing. I mean, the church has taken an interest in it for 2,000 years. What was Paul talking about when he called Junia an apostle? I think actually there's some people who are like, well, it doesn't say she was outstanding among the apostles. What it says is she was well known among the apostles. So there's some Greek problems there, but I don't read Greek, so I don't know about that.
Mm-hmm. There's also been a tremendous amount of work done on the question of deaconesses. So we have a lot of material available on that. For example, we know that the right to become a deacon or deaconess were two completely separate things that didn't happen at the same time and weren't made deacon and deaconess in the same operation of the Holy Spirit. I mean, we have a lot of scholarship on the differences in those two roles now too. So there's plenty to read if you still have questions about it.
Adam, thanks.
I'm thinking of Sister Sarah Butler. Sister Sarah Butler, she examined the question of women in priesthood and has also done a great deal of scholarship on women and as deaconesses.
Liz Kelly has been our guest. We've just been talking about women in the New Testament, so I will mention again her book called Jesus Approaches, What Contemporary Women Can Learn About Healing, Freedom, and Joy from the Women in the New Testament. She has a whole bunch of other books as well. You can find all about Liz and her books and her other work at lizk.org. Liz Kelly, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. It's fun. Thank you.
It's always
You're
fun.
Cool.
Actually, oh, that's there we go. I didn't even have to fish for that. She said I was cool. All right. Every time Liz is on from now on, have a little bit of jazz music ready for her. All right. We'll see you tomorrow, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.